Secular Yakking, Episode 73, November 1st, 2016, Atheist with Uzima Philip.
I believe that the natural is supreme, that from the infinite chain no link can be lost or broken, that there is no supernatural power that can answer prayer, no power that worship can persuade or change, no power that cares for man. Robert Greene Ingersoll.
Exploring the intersection of politics, science, culture, and history from a secular perspective. It's Secular Yakking with Robert and Tom, the dynamic duo of obscure secular media.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hope we had a wonderful week. I know I did.
Mm-hmm.
So with me this week again is Tom.
Hello, everybody.
And Carrie.
Hi.
So we're all together again. How convenient.
Like one big happy family.
It's like we have a show or something.
Maybe.
Right?
All right. I suppose we should just, you know, kind of get into things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll dive into it.
So we have a lot of Twitterers this week.
Mm.
Yeah. We have Ruth White Cabell. Looks right. Mitesh Patel. Maybe.
Sure.
Yes. I agree.
Okay. I love the devil.
Me too.
I think nice. Someone just wanted me to say that. We have Trav Mamone, Cohen Griffin, Runo Promo, Arielism.net, Dre Gibson, Native Stone, and Tanya Leach.
That's a lot for 1 week.
That is a lot for 1 week. I mean, quite a few of these came up today, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Dre Gibson, in fact, just started a podcast, which I'm going to try and listen to. I've listened to one episode so far, and it sounds pretty good. It's called Another Atheist Podcast.
Oh, nice. I've heard of that.
Yeah. So it sounds pretty good so far, so I'm going to check into it a little more. Maybe it'll go into my regular rotation. Who knows?
Awesome. And I see here in the notes that we have no iTunes reviews.
Yes, and which makes us starve because podcasts live on iTunes reviews.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of iTunes reviews, so last week with the weird, funky name, right?
Uh-huh.
We couldn't figure out how to pronounce it. So that was actually Matthew O'Neill.
Oh. Oh.
And okay. That was apparently his AIM profile, like way back in the day.
Wow.
Back when AIM was a thing. Yeah, he messaged me the next day. And he's like, you know, that was me, right? And I put it together because if you go look at it, it says it's Emo Neil. So it's Emo and then O'Neill. Yeah.
That makes sense now.
Yeah. All right. So thank you, Matthew, for that. And thank you for the message the next morning telling me what an idiot I am.
That certainly clears a lot up.
It does. So anybody got anything going on?
The stories? Carrie, I think you said you had a quick one.
I had one that not entirely relates to the topic we're going to talk about super soon. But, so, for Halloween last night, I went with my best friend and her girlfriend. And they've been dating for quite some time, which is just awesome. And so, her girlfriend has a grandmother who's majorly homophobic, and we all just don't want to deal with her, but we had to because she had to visit her at a church, which is all fun. And I just don't like churches in general because, I don't know, they just always seem to, like, creep me out.
Are you going to burst into flames or something?
Who knows?
All right.
I don't know, but... But yeah, so we went there, and I didn't burst into flames, surprisingly.
Mm, good.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, she, like, met all of us, and she doesn't like Bree whatsoever. But Bree just finds it hilarious, because they're dating in secrecy. And so she'll be like, she even said, be like, oh, you know what, you're going to find a husband someday, and it'll be great. You'll have amazing children. And Bree's just like, they're both trying to hide their laughter, and it's great. But yeah, I mean, it's just horrible that, like, she is so homophobic Like, I just don't like
it. It's always sad when people feel like they have to hide things like that from family members. Yeah. But
yeah.
Yeah.
But just... jokes on you, homophobic grandma.
Right.
Speaking of homophobic horrible things.
Mm-hmm.
Let's move on to our first story.
Indeed.
So
I had a story. Oh, I had a story, Robert.
Of course you thing. Do. You okay. killed my segue. All right, fine.
I did. I always do. I will crush. No, it's fine now. It's fine.
No.
I'm going to go see Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris tomorrow.
Oh, that is right.
Los yeah. Angeles. I'm pretty nice. Excited about that, so I'll probably talk about that next week on the show.
That's cool.
Awesome.
And if there's a question and answer segment, I'm going to do my best to get a hold of the microphone.
Good. Make sure to pimp us out as much as possible.
Indeed. Oh, absolutely. Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins, do you listen to Secular Yakking? Because I feel like you should.
Yeah.
We haven't taken them on yet. Maybe we should. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. Well,
if he stays off Twitter, we'll be fine.
All right. You can go to your segment now, I guess.
All right. Last year, Mississippi passed a law that allowed for open discrimination of pretty much anyone if someone has a, quote, religious objection.
Mm-hmm.
This was specifically targeted at same-sex marriage. The measure allowed churches, religious charities, and privately held businesses to decline service to people whose lifestyle violated their religious beliefs. Individual government employees may also opt out, although the measure says governments themselves must still provide services.
Oh, wait, how does that work?
I was trying to figure that out. I guess, let's say someone was a social worker, right? They could decline to work with a client, but the social services department would have to find someone that would work with the client, is my assumption.
But if nobody will.
Right, and that lies the problem. Which is why the U.S. District Court ruled the law unconstitutional.
Oh, yeah, good. I mean...
Obviously.
I mean, not just that, but, like, it just seems to, like, waste time to look for another person. Right. I don't know. Just to me, it seems to just waste time.
Yeah.
And money.
Yeah, exactly.
Taxpayer money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They ruled it unconstitutional because they say it preferred beliefs and creates unequal treatment for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender people.
Thanks for stating the obvious.
Right. Well, right. Sometimes you have to.
Yeah.
Because sometimes governors of states like Mississippi don't take that as a final answer.
Yeah.
In fact, the governor of Mississippi wants to appeal the decision.
Mm.
Yeah. Imagine that. This happened to be his pet project.
Yeah. That's how it always goes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the attorney general, who would usually do this type of work for the state, denied that course of action. He doesn't want to do an appeal because he doesn't agree with the law. He thinks it's unconstitutional, so he's not going to fight it.
Well, they'll also lose in court because...
Absolutely.
Or not the Supreme Court, but the district court already ruled it unconstitutional. Like,
well,
that's not how...
It's pretty obvious the Supreme Court will rule this unconstitutional.
Would. Yeah.
I mean, there's just no way this could stand up. It's another version of those religious freedom laws, only this one is really ridiculous.
Isn't it, I think it's North Carolina or South Carolina has a similar...
HB2.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's North Carolina. It's a little similar. Yeah, it's kind of the same thing, which that will be destroyed as well. But since the attorney general won't do it, the governor has decided to hire private attorneys, including some working for Alliance Defending Freedom, an Arizona-based Christian legal group that helped write the measure.
What?
Yeah. So he's using state money to hire an overtly Christian legal group.
He's using state money or he's using his...
It's going to... Oh, I'm not sure if he's using his salary, but usually in these cases, the state's going to have to pick up the bill, regardless.
Yeah, you can't hire a private attorney to sue on behalf of the state. There's no way you can do that.
Well, yeah.
He seems to think he can.
Okay, so, anyway.
Yeah. According to the governor's legal team, the law, quote, gives the opponents of same-sex marriage the same conscientious objective protections that federal law confers to opponents of warfare, abortion, capital punishment, and physician-assisted suicide.
I feel like it doesn't.
No, there's something in there that doesn't fit with discrimination against same-sex marriage partners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's not, like, first of all, you're not denying a government service to someone if you are a conscientious objector.
Right.
Or opponents of abortion. What do you, I don't even understand that.
Yeah.
Like, objector protection against opponents of abortion, so you chose not to get an abortion?
Yeah.
Like, okay, good for you.
Yeah.
Capital punishment. I mean, the only person who could really say no to capital punishment and make it effective from the state level would be the executioner. And then he probably wouldn't have that job anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the only person that could oppose that, well, I mean, I guess the legislature or the governor.
Well, or the person pulling the switch.
Yeah, or can... Yeah, or the person getting the switch pulled on them. Like, well, I feel like,
yeah.
I feel like I would be a conscientious objector to that.
Right. I could see that. All right.
Like physician-assisted suicide. Like, those things don't make sense.
No.
Mm-hmm. None of those things make sense. Like, because it's not denying services to anybody, unless I guess pumping somebody full of potassium chloride or whatever it is they kill people with is unless that counts as a government service.
In some cases, it may be. I don't know.
Yeah, but that doesn't make any sense, because you don't. If you are an objector to physician-assisted suicide,
you don't get one.
You just don't kill yourself.
Right. Well, at least not with a physician assist.
Yeah, and but you wouldn't be denied government services based on that. Like, there's no, like the social worker example you were talking about.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a social worker just none of the social, like, that wouldn't happen. Like, this is so stupid. I hope they throw this out as just trivial.
I have a feeling this is the one that's going to go to the Supreme Court, and we should see this maybe 2018, if it does.
Either hope it gets thrown out or goes to the Supreme Court so we can just be done. Like, oh, man.
Yeah, and then we can start getting rid of these stupid religious freedom laws.
People are really upset about gay people turning out to be people.
I know. It's like, they have rights? No, that's silly.
Like, no, and then I hope this doesn't turn into like a Roe versus Wade thing where they try for the next 40 some odd years to like circumvent it somehow.
Oh, you know they're going to.
Oh yeah, like now I'm upset.
All right, how about I upset you some more?
Okay.
By telling you that priests in Louisiana do not have to report child abuse.
What?
Continue.
Okay, the Louisiana Supreme Court has ruled that Catholic priests are not mandatory reporters of child abuse when administering sacramental confession.
What?
So, you know, when you go into the box to talk to your priest, mm-hmm. that's supposed, in general terms, that's supposed to be privileged information, right? That they have a clergy clause in a lot of stuff that says they don't have to report what goes on in there. Well, now they're saying that priests don't have to report child abuse, even though normally they would be mandatory reporters. So if a child came up to a priest not in the box mm-hmm. and told them, they're mandatory reporters. But because we're talking them in a confessional box, they no longer become mandatory reporters.
Mm-hmm. This is like when you, like, if you like confess to a murder in a, you know, in confession.
Right.
But even in cases like that, can't they subpoena them? Like,
I'd have to look into that, but there's something that tells me that they can subpoena them, but there's, in certain places like this, there are the clergy exceptions that allow them to use this. Kind of like when, so you're talking to your psychiatrist, there's the patient, doctor confidentiality, right?
Right.
It's similar, only they're using only religious basis on it. Hmm. So, like, the other people don't get this same exemption. So, psychiatrists won't get the same exemption on child abuse.
Yeah. So, basically, you can beat your kids as long as you don't tell anybody. Well, you can tell the priest,
yeah,
but he doesn't have to tell anybody because Jesus.
Yeah. So long as you tell him in the confession box. That's the stipulation.
That's disgusting.
Because according to what I've read, the people that supported this ruling said that
are terrible human beings.
Are terrible human beings, yes. And they said that if we didn't have that protection, people would stop going to confession.
Like, because you can't go in there and talk about how you abuse your kid?
Yeah, basically.
And you're super sorry about it, but you'll do it next Sunday?
Yeah. You know, how many Hail Marys for, you know, beating up my child?
Yeah.
And that's basically what it comes down to.
Wow. All right, so here's what the actual ruling says. Yeah, with respect to mandatory reporters, notwithstanding any claim of privileged communication, any mandatory reporter who has cause to believe that a child's physical or mental health or welfare is endangered as a result of abuse or neglect, or that abuse or neglect was a contributing factor in a child's death, shall report in accordance with Article 610.
Yeah, that's the law.
That's the law. But the court says any communication made to a priest privately in the sacrament of confession for the purpose of confession, repentance, and absolution is a confidential communication under code, etc., etc. And the priest is exempt from mandatory reporter status in such circumstances by operation of Louisiana Child Code such and such. Because, quote, under the tenets of the Roman Catholic Church, he has an inviolable duty to keep such communications confidential. So this is even, like, specifically protecting Catholics.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ruling was on a case of a young woman who told Baton Rouge area Catholic priests that a longtime church parishioner was sexually abusing her when she was 14. And the priest did nothing to stop or report the alleged abuse, so they sued the Catholic diocese. So that's what this ruling comes from.
Like, how is the Catholic, like, and this is just, sorry, there's the cat. Every episode, there he is. He's, like, chewing on my phone cable. Hang on one second, people. Things are going to get weird.
I better write that down.
No, it's fine. I feel like you should just leave it in there.
All right.
Just leave it in there. Like, right. The cat always, if I kick him out of the room while we record, he'll just sit at the door and cry the whole time. But if I let him in, he, like, tries to eat everything. Like, he's such a pain. Mm-hmm. Like,
the usual.
I don't remember what I was saying now. Thanks, Rafiki.
Way to break up the show.
This is Matthew the Apostle. If you need a quick update on the black collar crime from around the world, tune in to In the Name of God, the podcast, where I'll run down the most obscure news stories of those proclaiming a faith in God. That's In the Name of God, the podcast, the religious news as reported by the Atheist Apostle. Available on iTunes, Stitcher, or directly from the Secular Outreach Network at secularoutreach.com.
Way to break it up.
But yeah, we had talked about how the Archdiocese got sued.
Yeah. Right, so the Catholic Church is, as an organization, is perfectly okay with you harming children so long as you tell them you're sorry in private. Like, how is this not the pinnacle of evil?
Well, it's the status quo for the Catholic Church. How many priests have they moved around? Pretty much this exact same thing. How many years did it go before anybody even realized this was going on at such a scale?
Right.
So this just enables them to do even more, I think. Because now they just have to go to confessional, and guess what? It's all good. Even the priest now can do that.
Just so long as nobody else finds out.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, even if someone does find out, they can't hold the church responsible because the anybody who did it went to confession, and now the church says, our hands are clean. He went to confession. He repented.
Right.
That's gross.
Yeah.
So there's your news. This is a really upsetting show.
Mm-hmm. It is. But that's okay. We have a really cool interview coming up.
Yeah.
We do have a really awesome interview that sadly I was not able to participate in, but it's going to be cool.
It is.
Mm-hmm. I promise.
Has God We Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster In God We Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an In God We Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
Also, we haven't done a book of the week in a while.
Okay.
So I'm going to kind of break with my own tradition here. I'm going to recommend a work of fiction.
Well, that's interesting.
Usually I do history books or nonfiction works. So we talk a lot about the Satanic Temple on here. They always make news. There's actually some news out of Arizona.
Yeah, I can't wait to cover that.
Yes, that has to deal with them being denied
rights of invocation.
Rights of invocation in Scottsdale. And so we're going to cover that. I'm going to try to get somebody from the temple on here because I happen to be friends with the head of the Satanic Temple there in Arizona. Cool. And, but I don't know. Awesome. I don't know if they will because of pending litigation, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, so which brings me today, this week's book of the week, which is The Revolt of the Angels by Anatole France. And this is the canon for the Satanic Temple. Hmm. And it's what their metaphor of Satan is based off of. And of course, I'm not going to give away everything about it, but it's kind of a meditation on power. It's what power does and when you should take power. I highly recommend it. It was written in 1914, so it's kind of got that old style, very like Dickens-esque kind of. So
cool.
Some of it you kind of have to trudge through, but it's really great and I highly recommend it, especially for those who are interested in the Satanic Temple and kind of what they're about. Read The Revolt of the Angels and you'll kind of jump into the mindset of the Satanists.
Very cool. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
Today on Secular Yak, and we have a wonderful interview. With us today is Uzima Philip. He has been heralded as the Prince of Noise in a scene on the edge of New York City singer-songwriters, artists who dabble in various elements from folk to industrial and synthesizer-based genre. Uzima has done this, but with his own version of industrial noise-influenced post-punk with strong melodies, wide-range sound rounded out by experimentalism. Uzima channels inspiration from his unlikely childhood in the Gun Hill Projects in the Bronx, a new recording format, the Insta album, and being a queer person of color into a big, ambitious sound. Welcome to Secular Yakking.
Yeah, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. Interestingly, I ran across your song, your most recent song, because I have a lot of Google search programs going on, and one of them happens to be the word atheist. Oddly enough.
All right.
And yours popped up and I'm like, wow, this is really cool. We got because we don't get a whole lot of musical artists who use atheism in their music.
I mean, I totally
So I was like, well, let's check this out. I want to see what it is, and I thought it was kind of cool. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of industrial rock. I'm more of an EDM kind of guy. But your sound is really good because you're kind of right there on that edge of that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but let's talk about your music. Can you elaborate on the Prince of Noise and what exactly the genre of your music is?
You asked me like the hardest question that I'm not prepared for at the moment. Like, oh, what genre are you? Like, oh, wow. Yeah, so, you know, genre is kind of like a label that you put on it. But, you know, I guess rock, but traveling through noise, industrial, and folk music. But still with, you know, melodies and with, you know, creating kind of like a vision, a picture, and experimenting.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely got that listening to your music because I listened to a lot of your tracks. And, you know, like I said, I found them pretty interesting. So I might start listening to a little industrial if this is what it's more like.
You know what? It's not, though, because I listen, industrial, that was a label I kind of got because of a review I got by Louder Than War, a British blog. And I did something called Sound Opera Project 1, and they reviewed it, and they were like, this is the best thing from industrial music. And I was like, oh, I'm an industrial artist. But I mean, so that's bad. But, you know, it's like, well, I just took it, you know, and ran. You know, it's like, okay. And it is sort of kind of what I do. So they got it right. Well, I do listen for hard, angular kind of sounds. And then I add soul and add, you know, kind of life to it. Yeah. So, Matt, you know, marrying the two things together.
Yeah, it definitely works for me. I mean, mm-hmm. like I said, I'll probably look into a little more of this if I can, because I do like listening to music. So,
yeah.
So let's talk about your background, maybe your childhood and maybe your conversion, if you had one.
A conversion to
your non-belief or how would you describe your non-belief and things like that?
I would say that it isn't really anything. Like, it's literally I wouldn't put it into, I would say I'm an atheist, but I wouldn't even subscribe to, then I would consider it narrow.
Okay.
To say that I'm a traditional atheist, because I do believe in a lot of things, but I don't believe in kind of like the traditional concept of God and I guess traditional way. I do believe in a universal thing, the universe kind of moving in a direction, but it's a very complicated kind of thing.
Okay.
So I don't put it into one narrow, you know, category. So, and I think that our minds as human beings, we do create, we sort of have a direct connection in our minds to, you know, religious ideas. And, you know, even in my song An Atheist, I sort of kind of imply that we create, and even in the video at the end of it, it's the quote from the writer of we are the gods that we create.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a very, I can go on.
Yeah.
Infinitely about, you know, just how I think about that, but it doesn't fit into, if you were to take, you know, the traditional idea of God and religion from religion, I wouldn't subscribe to that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That mm-hmm. that sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
So your background, did you grow up religious?
I kind of grew up, I'm sort of like, I grew up in a household where my mother was kind of, she would send me to church and, you know, stay at home but do other things.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she had kind of like an atheist thing going on, and she's going back and forth, you know, in a wild kind of swing between, you know, sometimes she's feeling, you know, religious. Sometimes she's feeling, you know, she would, you know, speak about the fire and brimstone preachers and how much she really disliked that. So I was sort of, you know, fed that growing up, that duality of the two things of, you know, my grandmother was the one who was religious. She was the one who, you know, I grew up in a Catholic church. So my grandmother would, you know, she and I would go to church together. But my mother and I never once ever went to church together. So that shows you kind of, you know, where I come from.
That's kind of similar to my story. I grew up kind of Southern Baptist. My grandfather's Southern Baptist preacher, but my parents never went to church. So
okay. So I think there's a generation where people, like from the 60s and 70s, where people, you know, were questioning things.
Right.
And my mom came up through that, questioning religion, and that, you know, from, you know, whether it's Woodstock or, you know, the 70s and the disco culture, people were questioning all of that, and in the 80s too, but then it kind of swung back right. a little bit.
Yeah.
Like in the 90s where people all of a sudden got religion again.
Right.
And, you know, that became, you know, a thing. So I grew up in that with my mom, who they, you know, and I came from Gun Hill Projects. So there was, you know, that's part of almost where the industrial kind of thing comes from, because like that was a very kind of austere kind of thing, you know, growing up in that. And for me, and I guess as I, you know, get older as a person, as I, you know, mature, I just, things just become a lot more complicated for me. They just it just becomes very, you know, as far as belief goes. So what, you know, I guess, you know, there was a point where I just questioned, and, you know, I have answers to those questions, but they're not simple, you know. So that's where, you know, I can't believe, you know, a simple ideology about something.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I can't buy that at all. So,
yeah, I fully understand that concept.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
The secular community has what we call an issue with people of color being underrepresented, right? How does your non-belief play into your music, especially as a person of color?
Well, you know, the funny thing was is that I noticed that you shared it on Facebook, and you shared something from when it came out initially, one of the features on the blog Posture.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, part of that press release spoke about, you know, musicians who are Black who are kind of bringing in religion as a trend almost at a certain time.
Right.
And, you know, now. So there are albums coming out from artists and they're like, well, this album is my gospel album. Or this album is the, you know, it's this kind of thing. And I don't actually have a problem with people who are, for the most part, as long as you, you know, respect whatever, I don't really have a problem with people being religious, you know, to each his own. But to me, when you do an album and you say, okay, it's going to be an album that's about religion, it, you know, it almost would be nice if someone said that they actually dug into something and actually had it be sort of about, you know, religion.
Right.
Or have something that went, just putting a choir in the back is not your, you know, whatever. So see, I guess I'm challenging something that right there. And that was kind of what fed into the song Atheist, where I was looking at people just kind of almost, you know, grabbing the banner of religion and not questioning anything about it and saying, okay, this is how we, you know, this is how we are identifying ourselves now. But, you know, if we're going to question, you know, with like Black Lives Matter, we're going to question with these different things, different systems in society, a pretty big system in society's religion.
Right.
So that's one of the things that we do need to question and have that, you know, let it be an intelligent, you know, conversation and not just, you know, I guess I don't want to diminish what someone is doing, but, you know, not have it be kind of this kind of vain kind of thing. I that's whatever. But, you know, that's kind of like where atheist came from, because I was going through all of that. And I was, you know, if you hear in a song, there's like a duality between, you know, I guess how people perceive religion and how I think about it. And I'm kind of flipping the roles back and forth through the different verses and, you know, making statements. And, you know, even through part of the song, I speak about the trickster.
Right.
And, yeah, you know, yeah. And how kind of important that is. So there are different things. If you're going to get into religion, let's get into, we can get into the natural, you know, religions, you know, voodoo, get into all these things, because there's a lot of different things I think that you can learn from all these different belief systems and apply them to modern life and have just your pop culture tends to minimize things just to kind of make it sellable and let's just do this right now. And, you know, so that's where the song came from. I gave you the long-winded answer, but...
That's exactly what I wanted. I mean, we're secular yakking. We should talk as much as we can. And that's what I wanted to get into it. So you talked a bit about the inspiration for the song. What about the inspiration for the video? Because that's interesting on its own.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where did that come from, and what's the concept behind it?
Okay, so my partner and I, we do videos together, and I had no intention really to do a video for Atheist. But we were going on a trip to New Orleans, and he was just like, why don't we shoot the video in New Orleans? And I was like, wait, hold up. It went back and forth in my head, and I was like, that's perfect, because, you know, I went to New Orleans a couple of years back, maybe a year and a half ago, and I had almost like a spiritual, like, as an artist, awakening from the jazz, from the whole energy of New Orleans, and especially from, you know, the priestess Marie Laveau. I just became really intrigued. And it really, you know, as an artist, you kind of grab things and they kind of give you life, and then you interpret them and they become a part of what you're doing. And that's what happened when I went to New Orleans. And it almost, you know, that's where the whole Insta album thing came from, because I was like, let me inform the punk that I was, you know, of what I was doing with the voodoo spirituality and with the, you know, these kind of earth religions and, you know, goddesses and stuff of the thunder and of, you know, this, that, and the other. And, you know, even the danger and the mystery. And then, and you know, in New Orleans, you have the slavery and you have the oppression that came along with that, and all of it mixing together into, you know, pop music pretty much came from New Orleans. What we know of it pretty much came from New Orleans for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, even R&B, Mahalia Jackson, New Orleans, Louis Armstrong,
right?
I think Bo Diddley, but anyway, so all these innovators,
right?
And just so you could go to New Orleans and just walk down the street, and if you hear like the brass bands coming up the street, it's like souls moving,
yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, this kind of like, you know, the song of New Orleans obviously is when the Saints go marching in. And it really does feel like saints marching through, like your ancestors marching through. So when we went down to New Orleans and, you know, we were like, well, let's shoot the video down there. And we went on a trek, and I didn't even know that we were going to hit that cemetery. That cemetery that's in the video is Lafayette Cemetery number 1. And we literally, we go in, we bring in the small little camera. I have like all my, you know, literally iPhone, so I can hear the backtrack.
Right.
And then we, you know, block out, plan the scenes and do it. and hopefully no one shows up and they're like kicking us out of something.
Yeah.
That's how we do it. So that's what happened there. And luckily we do it in a way that you could put it together. You don't know that it's, you know, so, you know, kind of almost happenstance.
Right.
But, you know, you know, we went into that cemetery, and as I was doing it, I had actually injured my toe. So while I was kind of dancing around in that thing, I was dancing on an injured toe. and we were walking out, and I said to Jim, I was like, wow, you know what? I was dancing on the graves of slave masters. I mean, that cemetery is from 1800s.
Right.
But I think around 1860, whatever. So the people that would be in it, and that whole area was one big plantation.
Right.
And then it was carved up into the mansions of slave owners and slave masters. And so they would have been in the cemeteries in that area. So I knew pretty much what I was, you know. So it was just like this profound thing. First of all, you know, I think profound to do a music video for a song called Atheist in the Cemetery.
Right. Yeah, that was definitely an interesting juxtaposition.
You know, we didn't do anything that would have been disrespectful to someone's grave, anything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I was, you know, everything was respectful, but, you know, art for me is making a statement, and that doing it, in, you know, in that cemetery, which is a world-renowned cemetery. We tried to go to the cemetery that, which is the St. Louis Cemetery number 2, where Marie Laveau is buried. We tried to go there, but they were very restricted. So we didn't do anything there. You know, but that to me, like a lot of artists are doing music videos now in New Orleans.
I didn't know that.
They are doing it, like pop artists, like, you know, Nick Jonas. And not talking about his video, but in general, what I see from the videos is that they're, you know, on Bourbon Street and they're hanging out and this, that, and the other, but they don't really get into the real thing that is, you know, New Orleans and that spiritual vibe that is New Orleans. So, you know, and to me, part of spirituality is kind of like, you know, a duality of, okay, if I can say that, you know, in a song, atheist, where I'm challenging, and then I'm, you know, doing this weird back and forth challenging, but, you know, repurposing the idea of, you know, the creator or whatever, to do that in New Orleans and with the history with, you know, voodoo, and to use that, you know, because there's definitely in voodoo and, you know, like, you know, those kind of religions, there's this connection to Catholicism.
Right.
So to use all those things together to make a statement, you know, I thought was really great.
Yeah. What do you hope people get from your music?
Well, you know, I think from a song, you know, from Atheist, sometimes, you know, and I've said it before in the past, you know, the music industry can be such like a factory, and it's not just, you know, with, you know, major artists or this, that, and the other, or indie artists. It's just in general, you know, they love songs, they're this, they're, you know, how many different ways can you make a traditional love song, and what's the quirk way people are making a traditional love, or, you know, how edgy can you be about it, you know? But as an artist, as, you know, a true artist, you have to have something in you that you're, you know, has to come out, and because it has to come out, usually it's not something people have seen before, so you're like, you know, illuminating something, and you're bringing something to people that they haven't seen before, and that's what really a true artist does. So it's not, you know, it's a message, it's a language, it's a way to communicate. So I hope people, you can take two steps. You can look at the status aspect of, you know, of where you saw the song and what website you saw the song, who's talking about it, but then you can just have that one-on-one connection with the art and take something from it. And so that's what it's about.
Cool. That's a pretty good answer.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So do you have any plans for any upcoming songs? Anything in the works?
Well, you know, part of what it is just the way that the industry is right now, where you almost have to play it by ear. And, you know, Atheist, the single came out several months ago. Mm-hmm. And then the video came out after we came back from New Orleans. So, like a week ago. So, you know, I'm going to keep on promoting that. But while I'm doing that, obviously, you know, I have had things going on in my mind about, okay, what should a project be? You know, what should the next thing be like? What, you know, really coming from, you know, the essence and of creativity and saying, okay, this is what the next thing should sound like. This is the next statement, you know, that I should make. So, you know, it's a mixture of the two, of working what I'm doing right now, and then as I'm doing that, having the next thing kind of get itself together in my head, and then, you know, in my creative life, so that, you know, when that thing comes up, it's actually what I just said, you know, a statement, and it makes, you know, it's really something, and not just, you know, doing it to do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I can relate to that, doing stuff that I do. So, where can our listeners find you? Where can they get your music?
So, you know, Bandcamp. Atheist is off of an Insta album, which is three songs and a theme called Living Off the Land. And that's on Bandcamp. So you can download that there. And I have other stuff like on iTunes and Spotify. And what's the other one? Tidal. So, you know, that you can go and check that out there. And I have, you know, some releases like The Machine, this, that, and the other. Although the main thing I'm focused on is Living Off the Land and Atheist song. Yeah.
Cool. Well, definitely put a bunch of those links in the show notes for everybody to find
you. Cool.
So, well, this has been great. Very enlightening. Mm-hmm. Been a joy to talk to you.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's really cool speaking to you guys too, and I appreciate you contacting me and, you know, giving me the chance to come on your show. And to be honest with you, I, you know, you can do different types of podcasts and stuff, but really to do one dealing with atheism and religion and spirituality, and which is actually at the heart of the song, I thought that was great.
Yeah.
So then, you know, when you contacted me, I was like, wow, okay, this, you know, you want to take things up a notch. You want to, you know, really make a statement. So I was really glad that you guys reached out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Our tagline is the dynamic duo of obscure secular media. So it's what we do.
Yep.
Cool.
So yeah, it's been great talking to you. I look forward to some new stuff coming out from you.
Yeah,
and maybe we'll be in contact soon.
Well, definitely, let's stay in touch. Yeah. And I'm going to check out and, you know, keep up with you guys, and I'm sure you'll keep up with me, and
absolutely,
and move along through life, right?
Yeah, cool. All right, thanks a lot.
Yeah,
no problem. Thank you.
Yeah,
I think that's all we have for this week.
I think so.
Indeed.
So, sign-off time, contact info? Who's first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Well, of course, you can get a hold of me on Twitter at TCEssel, or you can email me, tom@secularyacking.com. Find me on Facebook. Search for Thomas Essel. You'll find me on there.
Carrie?
All right. Let's see if I'll get it right this time.
All right.
Okay. So, you can email me at carrie@secularyacking.com.
Yep.
Okay. And then I'm on Twitter, and it's krnightmares99. That's
she
it.
Got it.
She got it right.
Yes. Clap.
Very cool. All right, so I guess it's my turn. You can get me at robert@secularyacking.com for email. Twitter at themottoguy.
Mm-hmm.
Facebook, Robert the Motto Guy. And I suppose I should probably start putting out our Twitter information, since I forgot to do that. At Secular Yakking is the main show Twitter. And of course, podcast at Secular Yakking if you want to just reach us. And then we have Facebook and all sorts of cool stuff you can check out.
Yes, mm-hmm. And we want to thank our guest again, Uzima Philip. Thank you for coming on and interviewing with us. We really appreciate that. And with that, goodbye, people of the internet.